Is how it started. So this is the Grouchy Club podcast. That was her being grouchy. I'm John Fleming. She's Kate Copstick.
Justifiably grouchy, I think.
It says Friday the 8th of April. We're in the Mamabia shower shop. They're selling vast amounts of charitable goods to passers-by. Very, very valuable. And lots of people will be in here milling around, so there might be background noise. What?
Well, you and... I was just explaining to you. We always start the podcast with John and the irritating cough. Pointing the iPhone at me. And I was just explaining that really the iPhone should be pointed at him because I have a much louder voice than John. And then he started doing the what, pardon? Which I think, understandably, dear listener, got me irritated.
Of course, I haven't thought of any subject at all for this podcast. I thought, well, Edinburgh Fringe.
Let's start by saying hurrah,
yes.
hurrah. And well done to Richard Herring.
Indeed. So why is this for people who don't know?
Bloody...
I know everything, Copstick, but they don't.
Yeah, I know. What do you mean they don't?
He or she doesn't. The listener doesn't know.
How do you know? Most of the people who listen to this podcast are very interested in comedy. They're very up to date. They know a lot. They probably know more than us.
People is a bit optimistic, isn't it?
Well, all right, person.
Yes.
But, you know, they do know about... Why would you listen to a comedy podcast if you didn't know about comedy?
Well, it's not very...
And why treat your audience like an idiot?
It's not the right comedic, is it?
Unless you're Stuart Lee, of course.
Sure.
I watched The Comedy Vehicle last night.
His BBC TV programme for foreign listeners.
Oh, good God. Why don't you just put out, like, a companion pamphlet to the podcast each time for any stupid, uninformed, ill-informed people that might be listening and not understand a word we're on about?
Well, there might be Americans. It's the same sort of thing, isn't it?
Oh, God, here we go. Listen,
it's a good idea.
If there's going to be any casual racism, obviously, it's me that will be doing it.
But we're not talking about it. We're talking
about
Stuart
Lee. Because I'm a bad person. Yes, Stuart Lee. Even that, I prefer that... to that irritating little... I might smack you.
Oh, promises. The amount of money I've spent. No.
Yes, Julie. It occurred to me as I watched him on telly last night that he is unique in that he is unique. Most...
And do you think you're a journalist? A woman who makes some money by writing... He's unique because he's unique.
Well, I thought that's an intriguing lead into my thoughts on Stuart Lee and his performance. No, I think you'll find it's not.
Repetition.
He is unique in the comedy world in that...
He's unique.
Because every other comic...
is non-unique.
If you're going to keep interrupting... I actually thought this through when I was watching him last night. And, you know, if you're just going to keep interrupting and being silly, then I'm not going to give the listener, stupid as they may be, the benefit of my thoughts on Stuart Lee, he or she.
Well, that's my...
Oh, don't you have to say they now?
Well, I don't know, it's probably some abbreviation that... we're not going to get into sexism. Stuart Lee, tell me about Stuart Lee.
He is unique in that he is unique. Most all other comics, you know, big comics who have... quite a specific performing style or... he's coughing again, dear listener. Have wannabes. One of the first thing that happens is there's load... Stop! He's ferreting in the bin now. Would you get out of my bin?
That's what
they
call it.
I've lost my thread now.
Stuart Lee. He's unique, you know.
Yes, because he's unique, yeah. You know.
One of a kind.
All other... That's tautological. I wish I'd never started this. All other comics who have a specific style or who developed a specific style also develop wannabes. You know, the first thing, you know, there's lots of people who no names spring to mind, probably because I blanked them because none of them are very good. There are wannabe Jimmy Carr. He came along, did that deadpan one-liner, and... he begat a kind of horde of wannabes. The same with Tim Vine, the same with anyone that you can think of who's very... Even there are a lot of wannabe Michael McIntyres, and I know he doesn't have a specific style, but that very personal observational comedy, the man drawer and all that, there are wannabes. There are no... wannabe or try to be Stuart Lees that I can think of.
I don't know their names because they were so dull. They just sort of speak slowly and repeat themselves. This is terribly boring. They're not very good Stuart Lee impersonators.
But that's because...
it's unique.
That's because if you dissect the form, it is a man speaking slowly and repeating himself. And now... berating the audience.
Are you dissecting him and berating the audience, i.e. me? You're actually turning it to Stuart Lee.
Oh, I don't know if I've got the brain power, quite frankly. But watching him last night, the whole piece turned into him having a go at his audience for being insufficiently smart, insufficiently responsive, insufficiently everything. And I don't think... you know, I think Stuart Lee is the only person that can do that, because...
Louis Schaeffer.
No, but Stuart Lee never kind of flings himself on the mercy of the audience in the way that Louis does. He's begging to be loved. I cannot imagine Stuart Lee begging to be loved. And Louis is all over the place. I mean, he's like somebody having a nervous breakdown every time there's an audience to watch it.
Like somebody having a nervous breakdown.
Stuart Lee, one of the fascinating things is he's so kind of cold and calculating. If you look very closely, most often there's a little twinkle in the Lee eye, but on the face of it, pardon the pun, he's very cold, calculating and clever.
Yeah.
Alliteration there, John.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone else would get away with it, because it's almost like a hypnotic power he has.
Yeah. No, you are right. I've seen quite a few Stuart Lee wannabes, and they never works because they don't have his ability.
Yeah, and it is something to do with... you can kind of feel the ferocious intellect that is behind it all, and that is kind of what holds you. He doesn't look like somebody that's doing it all by force of personality, but I think he very much is. I remember I was at Spank. We love it.
Edinburgh show, dear American listener.
Oh, for God's sake. Spank, we love it. At the festival one year, quite a long time ago, and it was at the time when Stu had just... part of his act was an anecdote, an extremely lengthy, as always, and slow anecdote about meeting Ang Lee, film director. And it was extreme, very specifically... John is now trying to distract me by picking things out of my rubbish bin and putting them in his mouth. It's very much like having a small, retarded child to do a podcast with. You're fiddling, John. Don't fiddle. Would you like to talk about something other than Stuart Lee?
I'm fascinated. No, keep going.
No, you're
keep
not
going.
Fascinated.
I am.
You're picking things out of my bin. How fascinated can you be if you're picking things out of my bin?
I'm
very sorry, Stuart. John is obviously not a great fan of yours. Let's go back and talk about... if anyone would like to hear my further thoughts on Stuart Lee, the uniqueness of said and why, and my anecdote about his anecdote at Spank, we love it, at the Edinburgh Festival some years ago, please feel free to contact John or me on Facebook or Twitter or whatever you do. I don't really tweet, especially not now. But right, so you're obviously bored by Stuart Lee. This has taken too long. I'm speaking too slowly. I'll speak fast again. Can we congratulate Richard Herring, who has just gone crowdfunding and crowdfunded £100,000 to do a series of his sketch show. And I think this is wonderful, because nobody deserves it more than Richard Herring. He has done this with not a huge television profile. You know, he's not even famous like Stuart Lee is famous on the telly now. He has done it because through his podcast, through live gigging consistently, through doing clubs, through doing 13 or whatever it is, different Edinburgh Fringe shows, all of which were good, apart from one that I saw where he went down the Dave Gorman route with lots of PowerPoint or pictures or something. And oh, the Labours of Hercules one. I wasn't that chuffed with that. But anyway, all the others, I mean, fantastic shows, regularly good. Sorry about the background noise. Regularly good in clubs and not bothering, although I'm sure he'd like to have his own television show, about pandering to the kind of, what do you call it, the checklist that you have to complete for being on Have I Got Stop the Russell for You? And it's £100,000. This is not just a little, you know, attempt. This is a fully fledged series and it's absolutely wonderful. I think it could be the way forward. And if I were the commissioning editor, oh, God, if there's a job going, I'll take it. If I were the commissioning editor of any channels, I'd be shitting myself in a very minor way, obviously, but it just shows you. If I will stop talking in a minute. If he had gone, well, I'm sure he had gone to various commissioning editors and said, will you commission this series? They went, no, because you're not really him off the telly, you're not called Russell, and you're over the age of 25. And look what's happened. He has gone to the public, who the television are supposed to be doing it all for, and the public have said yes. So, to the commissioning editors.
And he's not keeping any of the money himself. It's all going into production, isn't it?
Really?
I believe so, yes.
He's not even giving himself...
Apparently not, no. No, so it's all going on the production.
But what, he's not paying himself for writing?
I don't... As far as I understand it, no, he's not... I don't know, he might be. No, well, I suppose that's a production. What happened at Spank? We love it.
Spank? We love it. I'm not telling you now. I'm in a mood.
Oh, no.
Right, what else were we going to talk about? Richard Herring. Well, bloody done.
I want to know about Spank. We love it.
As you insist, John, but you've got to promise... No footering around in my waste bin you see, now he's aiming Aggie's multi-surface cleaner, a scoosher thereof, at my face. How can you expect me to talk sensibly and analytically about the brain that is Stuart Lee when you're pointing commercial cleaning products at me?
No one can possibly imagine that that's true. There actually is a product called Aggie's multi-service cleaner.
There. I got it in Bundland.
Bundland.
Bundland. They've got Jane Asher bakeware and Aggie's cleaningware.
Surely Aggie can do better than Bundland.
Well, I don't know. Obviously not, or she wouldn't be there.
It appears that it's got a picture of Aggie with a thing called the Dire Detective, I think, on it.
The what? Great, you see, it says here, it's got zesty grapefruit and lime, produced in the UK, natural, non-toxic and biodegradable.
Oh, well, I'll drink that, hold on.
And
I want to drink it.
Assured product, blah, 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 blah.
Back to comedy.
Yeah, no, you see, you've put me off now. There was something else.
We love it.
Yeah, well, okay. It was at the time when Stuart was doing, as part of his act, a very, very long kind of Shaggy Dog story about meeting the director, Ang Lee. Stuart, as I think anyone who's a fan of his knows, is or was fairly obsessed with The Incredible Hulk. And Ang Lee directed a remake of a remake of a remake of a whatever of The Incredible Hulk. And this story went on forever, seemingly, in an even slower... It was like slow even for Stuart Lee, which means... To get it, to be able to watch the story normally, you'd have had to use time-lapse film work and just speed it up. It was like watching a flower open, or some would say paint dry. Not me, but it was very long, and it was at Spank, and people were really quite drunk. And so what happened was, he sheer power of personality, the whole room was still, even the drunk people, and he went through, it was at least 10 minutes... At the end of the 10 minutes, and I'm going to quote this now because it was a long time ago and it's gone into comedy history, the routine and everything.
Because you would normally quote gags.
Of course not. Yeah. Not from a current show. Absolutely not. Appalling. Lazy journalism and podcasting. Anyway, Stuart said, the punchline basically was, Ang Lee you know, you wouldn't like me when I'm Ang Lee.
Hey!
A real hero. And just as he was getting to that bit, and all of us who'd seen the routine, you know, several times before, we're going, oh my God, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes. It was a bit like waiting for an orgasm when you're having a wank. And you know it's there, and it's there, and it's coming, and it's coming, and it's coming. Anyway.
Let me just hold that for a second. Right, okay, carry on.
Okay. And just as we were all about to come, this drunk guy from the back went, you wouldn't like me when I'm Ang Lee. And the whole room just went, I mean, genuinely, it was worse than, far worse than, you know, when you're a kid at school, being in a class where somebody does something really bad and you go, oh, the teacher's going to be really angry. Ang Lee, indeed. And there was just this silence. Everyone was, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Even the drunk people who didn't know Stuart or whatever, they were like, okay, something bad's happening. And Stuart just stood there. Again, huge Stuart Lee-type pause. And then he just said, you know, who said that? And there was people, and him. He said, come up here. And he made the guy get up on stage. And he said in a very, very Stuart Lee way, you've just taken 10 minutes out of the lives of everybody in this room and completely trashed them. 10 minutes out of my life. So I want you to give them it back. And he said, I'm going to leave you. You're going to do 10 minutes. And, you know, just left the guy up there. And at the beginning, the guy was like, because he was very pissed. And it turned out he was actually an underbelly. This was Spank, we love it, is always on at the Underbelly. And this guy was an Underbelly employee. I think he normally worked in the box office. So this guy just, it was excruciating.
How far did he get?
Well, he was there. I think Stuart just left him there until he just really felt embarrassed and bad and dreadful. And everybody, I'm not quite sure if that was one of the times when we all shouted cunt at him. But
term of affection.
Indeed, in Glasgow. Yes. But it was, and then Stu kind of picked up the gig and carried on a bit. But it was, it's an extraordinary relationship that he has with his audience, which is, I mean, I think he probably has a higher proportion of wanker in his audience than most comics, because...
You mean pseudo-intellectual wanker?
Yes, I mean pseudo-intellectual wanker. Because, you know, yes, I love Stuart Lee. That's kind of like saying, yes, I'm very smart. And I understand irony. And I'm not buying into the over-commercialisation of comedy the way it is today. And I, you know, I need more meat to my laugh than the average comedy goer. But he has an extraordinary relationship with his audience. And I don't know how warm that relationship is. You know what I mean? It's, I mean, even with people with car crashes like Lewis, people go, oh, my God. But a lot of them...
And we love Lewis.
A lot of people just want to take him home and make his life okay, probably by filling him full of antidepressants and other heavy-duty medication. You know, there are comics, performers like... you know, like Martha McBrier, who you watch and you think, I want to move in with this woman. She just seems like the nicest person on the planet. And you know, even people like Michael McIntyre, you think, what a nice guy.
But with Stuart Lee, it's intellectual admiration or something.
Yes, yeah, or pseudo-intellectual admiration. Yeah. And I can't imagine, well... I can't imagine many people rushing up, you know, for an autograph after the show, because his persona kind of doesn't invite.
Yes, and,
that.
And you think he'd probably sneer at the
exactly.
Yes. Well, not sneer, but look down on the idea of autographs. Yeah.
Anyway, that was my story.
Well, that's it.
We could have had it 10 minutes ago, John, if you hadn't been rooting around in my bin.
But you did.
Are you homeless at the moment?
No. No, I just look homeless.
You've got the beard and you're rooting around in bins. I just wonder.
I'm practicing.
Should we be crowdfunding for you? The good news is...
There is no good news.
There is good news.
What is the good news?
The good news is that you are indeed coming to the festival, the Fringe.
I am indeed going to the Fringe for the Grouchy Club and for the increasingly prestigious Malcolm Hardy Awards for the final Friday, 26th of August.
That's fantastic.
At the Gilly Doo.
That is just... And where are we for the Grouchy Club?
We're in what used to be called the Meadow Bar. It's now called the South Side of Social or something like that.
That sounds really quite right on, doesn't it? Maybe they won't let me in.
I think it's called the South... I think it's been bought by the locals in some bizarre way. So anyway, it's what used to be the Meadow Bar. I think they've tarted it up in some way.
So do come along because it's a bigger venue. And sad as we frequently looked, with only two people at the Grouchy Club in the counting house, we will look even more tragic sat upstairs in the Southside Social.
Yes, and then it's on the second half of the Fringe, which is something like the 15th to the 29th or something, but it's on the www.grouchyclub.co.uk page. That was a good advert, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was excellent.
You think we'll get something free from Stuart Lee?
I don't know. I don't think he needs it. I was going to say yes. Talking of the counting house, it just seems to be kind of cocking up more.
Everything.
Yeah. I've a friend called Mike Hollingsworth, who I know. He used to produce all the big BBC shows and was married to Anne Diamond. Yes, that's I used to be. The TV chef on Good Morning with Anne and Nick.
What did you cook up?
I offered up my crusty breasts.
Vitriol?
I offered up my crusty breasts, which were delicious.
Did you actually...
And I had my autumn pudding destroyed by Mr. Blobby.
I wanted to know what your crusty breasts were.
Oh, they're delicious.
Because?
I'll let you taste them one time, John.
From what were they made?
Chicken breasts.
Of course they were. Silly me. Indeed. Silly old me.
Anyway, Mike has still occasionally dabbles in creativity and a few years ago brought a Bill and Ted's What's It Adventure.
Excellent.
The musical, which was tremendous. I loved it. Very, very good. Anyway, this year, I hope it's all right if I tell people this. Mike, he was approached by Lady Colin Campbell.
Who I know by name, but I don't know who the hell she is.
Well, she's
in the jungle.
Yes, she was in the jungle. And she's terribly, terribly posh. And, you know, I think most famously spent her very early years as a boy.
Oh.
So she had decided post... jungle, you know, Carpe Diem and all that, while she was still in the public to do a one-woman show, My Life.
She and I have a lot in common.
In Embra.
I grew up a boy.
And, really? What happened? Where did it all go horribly wrong? So Mike had contacted Karen Corran, who had said, this sounds fascinating.
Of the Gilded Balloon.
Of the Gilded Balloon. Karen said, this sounds fascinating. Yes, yes, we must do it. And she offered to kind of, not exactly co-produce, but pitch in a certain amount to ease things along. And I had a meeting with Mike because he was worried, hugely experienced as he is, just... He's smart enough to know that being experienced anywhere else in the world as a producer does not equip you to cope with being a producer at the Edinburgh Fringe, which, like Stuart Lee, is unique in that it is unique. So I was just going through various hints and all of that and why probably don't spend a fortune on big posters and all of that sort of thing. So we were keeping in touch, and Mike hadn't heard anything from Karen, and he was getting a bit worried, and it was getting a bit close to deadlines, and he called up the Gilded Balloon, and they said, what booking What do you mean, Lady Colin who? And then they were offered, Lady Colin Campbell, the counting house. Why not go for pay what you want at the counting house?
Which was a free venue, which the Gilded has taken over and made a pay venue.
So he said, you know, he had already decided absolutely not. I mean, for a start, there isn't a space there that would suit her. Our room is too small.
The
ballroom is far too big. Yeah. And so I explained to him that while it's pay what you want for punters, it's pay what the Gilded Balloon wants, which turns out to be quite a lot, for the performers, in that you have to pay really quite a lot for rent. Plus, there is mandatory entry, which is sort of £500 into the Big Four.
The Big Four brochure is more expensive than the fringe brochure,
yeah.
And I think it costs like £1,500 or something to actually get the show in.
Yeah, so it's
production
mandatory entry into that. So I think they're probably not going to come up. I think it would have been an interesting show. I mean, I know that when Nancy Dell'Olio came up, that was a bit of a disaster. But one of the things I'd said to Mike was, you have to learn a lot of lessons from Nancy Dell'Olio's show.
Don't have Nancy Dell'Olio in it.
which is don't take anything for granted. Don't think you're bigger than the show. Don't think you can make it up as you go along. Don't think that people will come because they're fascinated and they love you. Anyway, I don't know if they'll be coming up, but it seems that the passing on of the running of the Gilded Balloon has not been quite as seamless and positive a thing as possibly Karen had expected.
But we won't go on about it, because we actually love Karen. She's lovely.
We do. She's bloody fantastic.
They're wonderful things, but it's a terrible disaster, this counting house. So, that's it. Basically, so this podcast has basically been an example of how to do a podcast, which is...
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it is. I just sit back, say a few words, do nothing, let you rant on, and I've got a podcast without doing any work.
Yeah. Well, okay.
You think that's how
it is? That it, then?
I think that's probably it.
I think there was too much me in it. People don't like me, you know. You should be more in it, because people like you.
Well,
they don't like me.
But that's why they listen to me. If you've watched any of those documentary channels on TV, it's all about the Second World War and Nazi Germany. People don't like the Nazi Germans, but they're watching their droves.
You're calling me a Nazi? Like so many other people.
You're a feminine Nazi.
Oh, God. I'm Eva Braun.
Isn't that a shaver?